feel in life.
Hi, Rose Jordan, again, the Lesbian Radio Show, and my guests, Marilyn Stone and Grace Chanel, and we've been talking about goddess culture. I'd like to give the phone number again, if I may. It's 212-279-3407. Oh, and I think we do have a call. WBAI, you're on the air. Will you turn down your radio, please?
Hi, is this WBAI?
Yes, it is. You're on the air.
Oh, great. I would like very much for Grace and Merlin to talk about the new display of Nubian art that's over in Brooklyn and how that relates to the women, the goddess cultures.
Okay, we'll try to key into that.
Thanks a lot.
Thank you.
Well, Merlin would like to say at first she didn't even know the display was there and hasn't seen it.
It's supposed to be really good.
Really, it sounds very interesting.
Yeah.
I didn't know about it either.
You just opened up Sunday.
Well, now we all know instead of the audience. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Yes. WBAI, you're on the air. Hello?
Yes. Oh, I'm sorry.
Turn down your radio? Is that... Okay, fine. Hello?
Yes.
Yes, you're on the air.
I find this program absolutely fascinating because I'm a doctor that gave up medicine for painting, so I can key into both of these areas. But one of the things that I was most fascinated by was the woman who was talking about parthenogenesis.
That's great,
And I think one of the things that women don't understand, and they should, is that for years it's been taught in biology that it was the sperm that penetrated the egg, which is not true because scientists have recently discovered, or it's been around for a while, that the egg will engulf anything near it where there's a haploid number of chromosomes. So it's very possible that if a woman ovulates from both eggs during the same month, that parthenogenesis could occur. And the other thing I wanted to say is, when I was studying art history, we were always taught that everything from the snake goddess to the Venus of Willendorf were fertility goddesses.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And I'd like to hear what the other woman has to say about what these women, what does the snake goddess really represent, and why we were always taught to believe that any form of a female figure was always a fertility goddess. So I'll hang up now.
All right, thank you very much.
Okay.
Right. Well, I'd like to say, first of all, that this is something I dealt with at great length in the book because the serpent is a very important symbol in the goddess religion. And I ended up spending an entire chapter on the possibilities of why the serpent was used, but it certainly was used. And almost always, not in connection with fertility, as many men would like to think, as a phallic symbol, but in connection with wisdom. It was always at the oracular shrines and very closely tied in with them. And as I say, I spent an entire chapter, so I won't begin to explain, but this is where the serpent symbol comes from. And in terms of the fact that the goddess is always presented as a goddess of fertility, this is true. This is something I dealt with in the book, the so-called fertility cults, except that the goddess is everything else. She's the creator. She's the giver of wisdom and counsel. She's the giver of law. She's the giver of just so much else. And I brought some Babylonian prayers with me tonight. I'd like to just read one so that we can get some idea.
Can we take a phone call before you read it?
Well, certainly.
Okay, because I don't want to lose them. Okay. WBAI, you're on the air.
Hello?
Hello, you're on the air.
Yeah, I have a couple of questions. It's a very interesting program.
Thank you.
First of all, if I try to envision the... societies in which these ancient societies in which women had a very different position, is it at all correct to imagine that women lorded it over men the way men today lord it over women, or was it the situation in which people were equal?
I don't think that was necessary for women. I think it may be necessary for men because men are exogamous to the tribe. They have no natural place in the reproductive process, and one sees that actively in nature among the various species. And knowing that, they had to set up an entire system, which we call our normal social system today. And that required them to be dominant. I don't think that women who knew themselves to be the givers of life had to dominate. They were so intensely connected to the harmonious factors of living and of creating that they didn't try to dominate. It wouldn't have been a part of their conscience.
I see. Thank you.
Hello? Yes. Actually, the prayers that I was about to read will actually be an answer to this question as well. Not only was the goddess not only a goddess of fertility, but it will give you some idea of what the goddess imagery was. These are prayers from 1800 B.C., that's almost 4,000 years ago, from ancient Babylon, and they're prayers to the goddess known as Ishtar. Now, this is some idea of what people at that time thought of their goddess as Ishtar, which was their image of woman. 'Tis the goddess, with her there is wisdom and counsel. The fate of everything she holds in her hands. At her glance, joy is created. She is the power, the magnificence, the protecting deity, and the guardian spirit, the one who walked in terrible chaos and brought life by the law of love, and out of chaos brought us harmony, and from chaos thou hast led us by the hand, which gives us a very different image of, you know, the idea of what women were like at that time than the idea of simply fertility.
Well, that prayer doesn't sound as if anybody had to dominate it.
Right,
Grace said.
Right.
Yes.
May I ask one more question? Have you found any new knowledge about the Amazons who were mentioned so often in Greek mythology?
There's a lot of information on them in the classics. They're obviously not simply mythology, although there is a beautiful quote in the Encyclopedia Britannica just tossing them off as an upside-down idea or a topsy-turvy idea of what one country thought of another country's lifestyle. But if you read Diodorus Siculus or Pausanias or Strabo or many of the classics, they deal with them very factually. They were definitely a group of women, in fact, many groups of women in Libya, in Turkey, all throughout the Aegean Islands. And they might not have even been one tribe. They might have just been many tribes of women that existed at that time. But they also worshipped the goddess, which is interesting, too. They called her the mother of all deities, although a name was never given.
May I just inject, if you do get a copy of the Heresies issue on the Great Goddess, which is currently available, and look in the glossary, you will find several definitions there that relate to the Amazons. And one of the clues is Parthian, coming from Parthenosis. And there was a country called Parthia. That may have been an Amazon term also. We are not sure what Amazons might have called themselves. They must have had many designations, and one of them might have been Parthenusa and terms of that kind.
Have you any knowledge as to when there was the most recent group of Amazons anywhere in the world? I've heard there might have been some in Dahomey.
Oh, the African Amazons and the South American Amazons would be different groups, obviously different groups. The ones we generally refer to as Amazons are the ones that we're talking about that were pre-classical Greece, probably around 2000 B.C., at least 2000 B.C., on to perhaps, you know, 500 B.C. or so on. But they're very different groups than the ones. There definitely were Amazons in Dahomey, and there's quite a bit of writing. I'm trying to remember, but I know that I have read articles about them.
I've read Mary Renault has written about them also in the ancient times, the ones we read about in mythology and about
in the Greek and
and
right,
about Amazon, right. She's seen in Western Africa. I was just wondering if how recently there were such communities of people.
I do have to interrupt. It's a very interesting conversation,
oh,
but
okay,
we do have two
thank
other calls,
much.
And thank you so much for calling. I do want to give the number again: 212-279-3407. WBAI, you're on the air.
Yeah, I ate the stroveso. So
I'm sorry, I can't understand. What did you say? WBAI, you're on the air.
Hello, it's a fascinating discussion. I'd
yes?
like to know where I can find written information on parthenogenesis.
Grace, do you have
Well, it's very hard to find, and it's in books that are scientific in content and they wish to divert your attention from the subject. I read about 2.5 years of the biological abstracts, which are available in the Central Branch Library, looking up the title Parthenogenesis. And that is tedious reading. More available books are Reproduction in Mammals. Those are a series of 4 volumes, and they are available in ordinary bookstores for a very small price. You won't find a great deal of information in there, however. It is a case of researching in technical work.
Well, I do have one book that mentions, it's called Patterns of Sexual Behavior. For anybody who's interested, but it doesn't really say that.
Well, there was a caller who was a doctor who turned painter. I don't know if you heard her.
Yes.
But she did mention that this is the case and that there is a possibility of...
Oh, I do believe it.
Right.
But, I mean, I want to know what I'm talking about if I say it.
Yes, I know. It's very hard to find the evidence, actually.
Well, you might want to pick up, again, that copy of Heresies. I do give what information I was able to find and pull together about the possibilities of parthenogenesis occurring. That would give some information.
Okay,
well, thank you very much.
Thank you for calling. Yes, WBAI, we're on the air.
Yeah, if God is love and love is blind, then Robert Violante is God.
Okay, I want to give the telephone number again. It's 212-279-3407. Now, to get back to, everybody seems to be asking about parthenogenesis a lot, and the doctor who called really put it very succinctly when she said that anything that goes near the egg will be absorbed. I mean, you know, simple as that. You had said, Grace, you had said something to me again that you blew my mind. You said that 2 women could have a baby together? Is that what you're...
Well, there are many possibilities.
Yeah.
Yes, to clone ova. And
How would that be done? Would it be done the same way as they claim they did it with the male sperm? Yes, right.
Well, I don't want to try to make that comparison because that gets very confused because
yes.
He apparently can't be validated in the
yes,
least.
Uh-huh.
But if you start with ova, you could combine, as the doctor suggested, another ova with it. Now, part of the difficulty is that you must have what is called a seminal cell, or at least a primordial germ cell. You must not use an adult cell. If you use an adult cell, that has already divided too many times to be capable of development into any other form.
What is the difference between an adult cell? I mean, we're getting very complex.
Yeah,
here.
I didn't really want
to
do that.
Yes. Well,
the problem is that cloning ova probably occurs naturally within the body, where anything can abrase the egg, cause the egg to start cell division, and that cell division will absorb a polar body, another ova.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you should be able to do that in the laboratory if you wanted to.
Yes. I was just wondering, and here we go with the hypothesis again, I go off on visionary trips sometimes. I wonder if there are certain women who are pregnant that become pregnant in that way, and the men and the husband and the wife doesn't even know that, and they assume it is done the usual way, the procreative way that we are all familiar with. Is that a possibility? How?
Well, as you quoted, that embryologists and
yes.
other embryologists
uh-huh.
would have to agree. They are compelled to admit that this could be a possibility, and no one should be surprised if a woman proclaims that she is having an
right.
immaculate conception.
I just wondered about something again. There are these paternity suits where
yeah.
Men are accused of fathering someone's woman's child, and they take, a blood test? Is that a way of taking a blood test of a woman to find out if her daughter is
yes.
is her is there a,
yes
now that would be fascinating.
That is what they did in 1955, and
oh,
they came up with this woman and daughter team where the enzymes were so closely matched that it was impossible to believe there had been a father.
Mm-hmm.
And this is what Rorvik could submit to. If he wanted to give blood cells, there could be tests conducted that would definitely prove that his character Max had this child and that there was no other mother, no
but
other
he didn't
donor.
To give, he didn't want those
no,
tests
No, he refused
to, be made.
To.
I see. Yeah. Yes. But in that case, they made a headline that really was completely ridiculous.
Yeah.
A child born without a mother. I mean, it's not possible. If you use an egg...
Men
do strange things.
No, it always fascinates me is for millions of years, obviously, women have been having babies, and men constantly laugh at it, put it down, or trivialize it. And this whole big hurrah about a man making a baby, particularly this test tube baby in England, where the baby was in the test tube for probably a few hours and then had to be planted back in the woman again anyway, as, you know, constantly being touted as the test tube baby. As if it was some great big thing, because they never realized the amazing abilities of women. And, you know, until they finally decide that they want to take it over, when they own it, then it's important.
I have this feeling that there's some sort of, I don't want to get too Jungian about it, but there's some sort of universal consciousness among males that they seem to remember when they perhaps could have or would have been mothers, and they seem to want to go about it in a technological way to prove that they can do it, too.
Well,
you know, a lot of men
rich.
Keep saying, I had a baby today. Yes, it's like, I had a baby today. And I said to this friend of mine, who had a baby? Oh, your wife had a baby. Oh, yes, of course. But they keep saying, I had a baby today.
Right.
It's a very strange language they use.
Well, mythology, has that persistent myth of male motherhood. And, of course, we have it in religion where Adam gave birth to Eve.
And
right.
Zeus
gave
birth
to Athena.
Athena out of his head.
Right. I mean, there you have it.
After he swallowed her mother.
Yeah, that Adam and Eve story is interesting because, again, the snake was involved.
Mm-hmm,
I'm just
right.
wondering if the Adam and Eve story had something to do with, you know, the fall from paradise. Paradise was Gianocris, probably. And the fall from paradise was when he found out that he may have had something to do with procreation and then took over in some way. Is that...
Well, that has a theory.
It's
obviously a story.
That's another story?
That's a story.
Yeah, I mean, it didn't exist at all.
Well, basically, what I presented in the book was the fact that the entire story of Adam and Eve was developed as an allegory to put down the goddess religion, the snake, the tree of life, the fact that woman teaches sexuality, but it's a sin rather than sacred, which it had been in the goddess religion. Every part of it is just made up to counteract and suppress the goddess religion.
So it wasn't a legend that had some truth in it, but it was just a propaganda.
It was
teaching.
A legend that had never been known in that area. We're talking about the ancient Near East.
Yes.
Every other part of the ancient Near East, they understood the goddess made the world, the heaven, the earth, the people, and so on.
And the goddess was often a snake. It was often Amphion, the great world goddess, great world snake.
I wonder why was the snake...
Well, this is what I said I got into in the book quite extensively, but it was tied in with the oracular shrines, which is why it's the snake that gives the advice to the women. It's a way of putting down the oracular shrines and the priestesses who give the information about very important factors in their lives at that time. There's a lot of evidence on that. And so basically to separate the woman from the snake, which is what the Bible says, you know, they won't have any connection anymore, the woman and the snake, is to basically say, don't listen to the oracular priestesses anymore. They have no validity. Beware of false, what they really mean, but when they talk about false prophets, is false prophetesses from their point
women,
of view.
Women,
right.
Well, the snake must also be understood to be a representative of far more than merely a creature. The snake is the spiraling energy. It is symbolized as, the snake always symbolizes Kundalini energy. And that spiraling energy is basic to life. It is the form of DNA, for instance. We see it depicted again and again in all of the ancient icons.
So it has nothing to do with a phallic symbol at all.
No,
that was
but
just
women in snake energy,
right.
women in
right.
snake energy
right.
is the power.
Very
women
tight,
have
right.
snake energy.
So that was a depiction in drawings or pictures of actual energy. I mean, that's really what it was.
Yes.
I see. Yeah, you mentioned
it's Kundalini
about the,
energy.
You mentioned something in your article about a number 8 or a helix or
yes, well, that is the coupling of snakes. They form an 8, which is why they are depicted on the caduceus. It is a staff of life, and the coupling of snakes was held to be a site forbidden to men. If they witnessed it, they were forced to live like women. They suffered the female disease.
Mm-hmm.
And this happened to the barbarians who sacked the temple of the great goddess at Ascalon. This is recorded as myth and as tradition. So the coupling of snakes are women, and the coupling of snakes was the coupling of women.
So we find lesbianism in almost all of these writings, in all of these legends.
Might have been so totally accepted that it was hardly even mentioned. I mean, in the ancient religion, they had heterosexual coupling as a, you know, part in the temple.
Mm-hmm.
But this might have happened because lesbianism was so totally acceptable that this is how women lived.
I see.
They had to take men in, possibly, as a way of reproducing the, you know, species.
Well, but if parthenogenesis was so widespread at the time, or
well,
was it?
Doesn't seem to have been at that period.
At
we're
that
talking
period,
about 3,000, 2,000 B.C., you know.
All that changed. I wonder what happened.
Well, there was probably what we all must fear again, radiation and the need for mutation.
I see.
Anyway, as a species, we would have been mutating.
Mm-hmm. Well, I want to give the phone number again. It's 212-279-3407. We do have a call, okay? WBAI, you're on the air.
Yes, hello. I'd like to ask if your panel there has ever considered the implications of the two subjects they're speaking about tonight.
Which one did you want to ask the question of, either person?
Well, to the panel in general.
All right.
The idea of parthenogenesis and the whole idea of genetic manipulation links in with the history of mythology in this way. Is it possible that in the past that genetic manipulation was available at one time to some civilization?
I'm not sure they're talking about actual manipulation. That's what men seem to be doing now. Grace, would you like to answer that?
Parthenogenesis is natural. It is, as the woman who called in explained, the possibility that anything abrasing the outside of an egg will cause it to subdivide, and that has been known as early as 1904 by scientists.
Yes, but
they
you're
used
also talking
anything.
About test tube babies and the possibility of cloning human beings, and that's genetic engineering.
Manipulation.
Whether it's not really creating a new species, but it is is the first step towards that.
What sort of new species? What do you understand, Grace?
Well, I don't know that it would create a new species. It might create a stronger species.
Well, new species have already been created today.
I'm not sure I understand what you mean by new species.
New species.
You mean a mutated female was born? I don't understand what you mean. Grace, do you understand this question?
Well, maybe he can rephrase it.
Yeah, can you?
What I was trying to explain was this. The two considerations that we were talking about today, the mythology and the scientific breakthroughs in genetic research today, point to one thing. Is it possible that before, in our history, even before mythology, is it possible that some section of the human race had the ability to genetically manipulate or to crossbreed species?
No, I have a feeling that Grace is not saying that.
I don't think
I'm just
wondering. At the time, first of all, I don't think we're talking about mythology.
Well, you were speaking about all the mythological creatures.
Merlin and Grace, I don't believe we're discussing mythology. They were discussing fact.
Well, mythological creatures.
Who were the mythological creatures that we were discussing?
I think I understand maybe what you're curious about, that there might have been existing other species, other forms of life that we know certainly happened, and some of them disappeared from the face of the earth. That anyone manipulated that humans assumed that power, is something we can't answer.
Oh, I don't think there's any real answer to that, but the thing I was trying to get at, is it possible that the mythological creatures that are thought of today as just myths did actually exist?
You mean things like chimeras and dragons and...
and centaurs and all of that.
Well, the thought is that they are perhaps iconographic, that a centaur might have been a representation of several sororal units who combined, who originally were lionesses, originally snakes, originally goats, and then they unified. That's one thought. It's a little bit like a political cartoon today where we show a man with an elephant's body. You understand? That's perhaps how that kind of creature was devised. It's a question that's very difficult to consider.
And I'm sorry we can't really continue with this question because we're going to have to wrap up.
Okay,
thank you so
thank
much
you.
For calling. Okay, now, Merlin, can you give us a little blurb about, well, your book and how you feel the goddess culture could be beneficial if we could get back to it?
I think it's certainly very important that something that's been left out of our education and the thousands of years that have been totally censored or somewhat distorted when they have been mentioned are vital for women to know about. It's, may I read this?
As long as it's very short.
Oh, it isn't very short. Maybe I better not.
Okay,
all right, let me just say then that the main point I would like to make is that we begin to question why the censorship. Why these thousands of years on which we have evidence that women had an extremely high status, that a deity was worshipped that was female as the creator of the universe, as the creator of people, has been blotted out from our education, from our knowledge, and that we start reclaiming this information because obviously that's important to us.
I'm sure Grace agrees with you, but do you have anything else to add?
Well, I would only like to add that as women, we do have to unify ourselves, and that wholeness is ours. If we differentiate, distinguish ourselves, we suffer. We have to claim the whole world, and that potential is something which women enjoyed formerly, and that's really what my politics is, and I hope that's the politics of the future.
Well, and that's my politics, too. Well, before we do that, I want to make a very fast announcement. There's a concert by Olivia Records, October 20, 21 at 8 p.m. It's called The Varied Voices of Black Women, Boston University Campus. That's the North Auditorium. You'll hear Linda Tillery, Mary Watkins, Gwen Avery, and Pat Parker. So you can, I guess you write to the bookstore at 186 Hampshire, Cambridge, Massachusetts. Thank you very much, Merlin and Grace, for your contributions tonight. Tune in next week to the Lesbian Radio Show with Eileen Kane. This is Rose Jordan. Good night.